You are listening to Social Europe Podcast. We discuss cutting-edge thinking on politics, economy, and employment and labour with some of the most thought-provoking people around, including Nobel Prize winners and other internationally acclaimed experts. So welcome and enjoy the conversation.
Hello and welcome to this ninth edition of Social Europe Talk. My name is Robin Wilson. I'm the acting editor-in-chief of Social Europe. And we're bringing you this episode today with the generous support of the Friedrich Ebert Stiftung. Not as previously from the European Parliament, but virtually online. We hope you will still enjoy the discussion. It will be on the theme financing the EU budget and the recovery plan. And I'm very pleased to have with me, not physically, but present, three distinguished contributors to that debate. All parliamentarians. First up will be Margarida Marquez, a member of the European Parliament and its co-rapporteur on the multi-annual financial framework. Secondly, we'll have Kimmo Kiljunen, a member of the Grand Committee of the Parliament of Finland. And then to round off the opening statements before the discussion really gets underway, we'll have Miguel Costa Matos, who's a member of the Portuguese Parliament and it's a rapporteur on EU own resources. I hope you enjoy it a bit.
Thank you, Stefan. Thank you, Miguel. Thank you, Kimmo. It's very, very useful to have this debate because, as we know, next European Council next week. I don't know if they will reach an agreement, but if not, maybe a new European Council will take place later on, some days later. But what is important now to understand is that this proposal of the Commission for MFF and multi-annual financial framework to 2027 is based on own resources. It means the recovery fund is a fund that in the end of the day is repaid by member states by own results. If there are no end results, member states must repay this money of this fund after 27, maybe 28, and until 2058. So this is a very clever approach from the Commission in the proposal of the Commission. Because in the end of the day, Commission is doing a blackmail, a positive chantage, as I like to say, because member states need to approve own results. But to approve own results is up to national parliaments to ratify and to decide on own results. It's why it's so important to work together with national parliaments, but a political will must be reached to ensure that after all, the national parliaments can ratify the own reserves. When I speak about own reserves, I speak about a package on digital, on plastics, on carbon. It means own reserves linked with European priorities. And so this is the idea to organize these debates. And to have other approach, other point of view, and to try to mobilize different knowledge on that way. It's why it's so important that Miguel is in charge of the report in the Portuguese Parliament, and this debate can also contribute to the content of the resolutions on our results. Thank you.
Thank you, Margarida, for starting off our discussion. And that immediately brings us into two interesting questions. That is to say, first of all, the
disposition of the national parliaments, and secondly, which sources of revenue should be the focus in enhancing own resources. Now, as background, the last time the multi-annual financial framework was being agreed, it took quite a long time in terms of the discussion in the national parliaments. We haven't got very much time in 2020 with the urgency of the needs of the recovery. And so I want to turn to you, first of all, Kimmo, to give me your thoughts on how this will play in the national parliament in Finland and what attitude you would take yourself.
Thanks a lot. First of all, I am very grateful we do have the opportunity to have this type of debate. You are right, all of you, that this is one of the big challenges for European Union, for all of us in Europe, how we create the recovery out of this corona crisis. This is a very much a topmost debate here in Finland too, not to speak, not the least in the parliament. We will have actually obviously our committee meetings in the, during this week. It's actually holiday period in Finland, in July already. Nevertheless, we are meeting here and obviously preparing ourselves for the extraordinary meeting taking place at the European Council level at the end of next week. I want to say first two points generally, and then later on let's discuss about the budgetary issues and own resources, all those, etc., etc. You, as a chair of the meeting, or whoever said actually that the title of ours is Financing the EU Budget for the Transition and Recovery. Yes, okay, we can discuss about that theme, but I actually enjoyed more the overall title of the whole series when it's saying achieving a socially just, green and forward-looking budget of MMF for European Union. Because I really think so. And that's my personal opinion. As all I want to speak are my personal opinions, not necessarily our government, although I'm representing the Social Democratic group, for the Social Democratic group in our Grand Committee, etc. And we are supporting, obviously, government prime ministers from my party. So obviously, we are close to the government position too. I think so. This coronavirus crisis, COVID-19 crisis, obviously is a challenging, even catastrophe. In very many countries of ours, both in economic-wise, but particularly obviously human-wise. That's why it's also economic-wise, because we should try to avoid it. So now we try to find the ways of recovering out of this. And I would say, like to say, let's use this as an opportunity to really change, to make a change. That's why I like the word social justice, greener Europe. Because that's a challenge for us social democrats. Really, let's utilize this opportunity seriously. We'll later on discuss about the concrete issues. But second point, which I wanted to also say, relates to the present agenda. You mentioned yourself, Robin, that it's a time of compromises and let's see how it goes. And Margit Chait spoke about the next weeks. Can we reach achievement at the EU Council level or not? In 1 week's time, compromises are, we are waiting, obviously, Mitchell's proposals, etc., compromise proposals, etc., etc. But I would actually like to say we should see the big issue and the smaller issue. Small issues are actually what we are debating, the resource, etc. Big issue is, can we actually, at multilateral level, orderly way, utilizing the international cooperative system like European Union, to solve this type of crisis? Or are we going more and more back to the, let's say, national approaches? We do have big powers playing very much with the national sticks, starting from US, Russia, China, etc., etc. Are we going back also in Europe that we are only, as we are up to date, trying to solve the issues nationally? Or are we relying on our cooperative structures, the integration, what we have created, the cohesion of integration, what we have created in the European Union? That's why it has a bigger challenge from Europe to make the compromises and show that we can do it together and not actually relying only on our national policies. So these are the two points I wanted to first say. Later on, I will discuss about the concrete issues about the how we are reaching it at the national level and what are the resources, etc. Because I think Miguel, also my good friend, want to say something.
Sure. And Miguel, before I bring you in, I think that would be useful to continue that point that Kim was talking about. How do we get this mood of collective solidarity in Europe over the budget and the recovery plan when, of course, over the years, in fact, the contribution to the budget from own resources has declined as a percentage. There's been more emphasis on the national contribution. And there is always at the back of the minds in many cases across Europe, this idea of juste retour, that we should be getting back what we're putting in, rather than a more collective approach. How do we get to that more collective approach that Kim was talking about in this multilateral international context that he's mentioning in terms of America and China and so on? How can that be done, do you think? How can the right language be found? You go.
Hi, good morning, everyone, and thanks a lot, Robin, for the question. Also, a very big thank you to Margarita and to the Friedrich Ebert Foundation and to Social Europe for putting together this debate on such an important topic. It's also a great pleasure to discuss this with my great friend, Kimmo. We've had many debates on this issue in the past, and so it's good to be having this conversation with you. Truly, I think this is an opportunity, you know. I think this is an opportunity for us to rebuild trust, in the North, that Southern European countries will be able to use this money in a responsible way and in a sustainable way, but also faith in the South that actually the European Union can serve a purpose of convergence, of providing better living conditions for the generality of people, and not only an avenue towards liberalization and precarious work. And so really, I think we need to make the best of this opportunity. I mean, there was a recent poll by the European Council on Foreign Relations, which showed that in Portugal was one of the countries where most people thought the European Union had been useless, completely useless in this tragedy, in this coronavirus pandemic, but we were also the country which had the most hope, the most interest in building a stronger European Union, which actually shares more resources and shares the mission to recover. I think, you know, what the Commission has proposed certainly isn't Eurobonds, but the fact that it is sharing the mission of raising the capital in financial markets, and then that it is saying, we agree that we need to spend on certain key areas and we can find consensus in these key areas, will actually let us go towards this mission with a little bit of more confidence and more trust in each other. This was something which we had discussed a lot. Ultimately, I think the success of this in rebuilding that trust and in actually, as you say, proving that multilateralism works and that the European Union can still respond to a crisis will be something that Margarita has talked about recently quite a lot, which is how quickly and effectively can we put the money from the recovery fund into European state budgets, and how can we actually put that then onto the ground in the economy as public investment or as support for private firms investing as well. And ultimately, I fear that as the setup is being designed, we are looking at something which is too little, too late, and also bearing in mind that the MFF is not being held constant, but actually we are cutting in the MFF as a way to, and then compensating that with more money in the recovery fund. We might be exchanging a permanent budget with a greater capacity to deliver a European Union that meets the test of its times, in exchange for a temporary recovery fund, which will be just a big disappointment for many people. If, as Margarita has pointed out, investments will only come in 2022, 2023, that will be too late for many firms, for many families, and people will suffer a lot. So let's hope that we can change the needle and make things happen faster, because that will be key to making trust work.
Thanks, Miguel. And I'm conscious, coming back to you, Margarita, that you just mentioned in your introductory remarks some of the
the ways that we could make this envelope of money larger. Miguel's talked about it being too little, and too little, that is the risk. And I wanted to ask you what you think in terms of making the pot bigger are the priorities among those various ideas you mentioned, such as have been talked about already, which have included issues like, for example, extending the emissions trading scheme and a common border adjustment mechanism to raise more money from effectively ecological taxation. What are your own feelings about that, about what the priorities are that we could possibly move forward on?
Yes, concerning the proposal, I have to react to what Kim and Miguel said. I feel that the fund has a good dimension. And if the fund will be agreed on that amount, is a good decision. Could agree in the next during the next European Council. So the point is that this fund is limited, temporary, is limited on the time. It means it's for 4 years. And the multi-annual financial framework is for 7 years. And my point and my difficulty is if in the next European Council, leaders will be, because the urgency, they will be too much pragmatic. So, as they can have money coming from the recovery fund, it's not so important to have the money on the MFF. It's why the department asked for demand a revision in the end of this fund. Because maybe, I don't know, we can, if you can make progress, if you can make progress on our results, maybe the financing of the European Union budget is strong, so we don't need new sources of financing. If it's not the case, we need to do this debate. Concerning the own reserves, what must be clear is that own reserves are linked to the European priorities. We don't want to ask more money to European citizens. We want own reserves linked with European political priorities. On climate, for example, why carbon tax and plastics, on digital transition, it's why GAFTA, we need to have a taxi on digital. OECD is doing a great job, maybe not we need more fast, we need decisions more fast, but we need to create an European tax on digital, for example, because in the end of the day, maybe digital is the most beneficiary, is the sector that must has most benefits from this crisis. We want a fair internal market. And it's why big enterprises acting trading in the internal market can also contribute to the European Union budget. So, and we need to clarify this approach. We need fairer, we need a more fair system, taxi system all around Europe, and we need also more internal market concern on taxes also.
Just to focus on that point about taxation, Margarita, obviously there's been a long-running argument in Europe about corporate taxation. And unless we can find a way through that, that's a very big deficit in terms of revenue which we could be benefiting from. There's also been, of course, much discussion over the years about a financial transaction tax or even some kind of tax on individual wealth in Europe. These would be able to raise much, much bigger amounts of money. But is your view that these are simply too ambitious for the moment and we need to make whatever progress we can in the short time scale we have to work with? What would be your view on those other sources of revenue through taxation? What do you think? Margarita, what do you think about how we could possibly make more progress in terms of taxing corporations and taxing wealth or financial speculation on a European scale? Are those issues we can really hope to return to, or is there just too much, are there just too many different views on that to make progress?
I remember during the Portuguese presidency 2000, it means 20 years ago, this debate, more coordination on European taxation, was in the agenda of an European Council with a very strong document at the time. But it was 20 years ago. But now I think that we have a framework, a positive framework, to go ahead on this initiative, because we need our results. It's very difficult. We need, first of all, a strong political will during the European Council, but we know very well that political will is not enough, because we need to change the ceiling of the contribution of our reserves to the European budget. And we need to use the treaty to move to change this ceiling. And this, to create this ceiling before, took more than 2 years. And now we can't wait for 2 years. We need to work. But I think that it's possible. When we look to the fiscal compact, member states could agree in the fiscal on the fiscal compact during, I don't know, half a year, less than half a year. And they did it, and they ratified it by national parliaments. This is the exercise that you must do now. But when we look to the to the economic forecasts published last week, when we look to the GNI, to the GDP, to the unemployment rates, it's clear that coordinated action must be done. And for it, we need our results. And I think that this is the good step, the good context, the good framework to go ahead. But it's difficult. I need to agree with you. It's difficult because it's something that we are demanding a long time ago. And it's clear that in our manifesto, in the Socialist Manifesto for European Elections, have a fairer tax system in Europe is clearly needed.
Which are the how to develop their own resources. When I said you in my starting note that we can use this as an opportunity to have something new out of Europe, but really having something new from our social democratic perspective, clearly this to develop these own resources is one of the major areas we should invest in coming years. One of the major areas. We have discussed, obviously, I remember very well, I was a member of the convention drafting the constitutional process which gave the Lisbon Treaty. Earlier, we discussed quite a lot about the financial transaction tax 20 years ago. I remember it very well. And obviously, the argument goes so. There are two areas of argumentation which are important here. First of all, the basic argument is that we have lots of taxes, value-added taxes on trading goods. But there's only one single commodity, we can say so, or issue. We are not taxing. And that's the money transfers. Why so? Because they actually are the biggest financial resources altogether. Why we are avoiding taxing, creating a value-added tax for trading money in different formats. Probably tax was discussed, obviously, and all other issues. I don't go into the details now. I speak about the principles. we do have a huge opportunity, huge amount of money to be taxing also in terms of creating resources, but also furthermore, creating control over financial transactions globally and nationally too. That was the basic problem of financial crisis. We couldn't see. It wasn't transparent, the system. And obvious, because we don't have any authorities to follow, for example, the transmissions in terms of money. So obviously, that's the one issue. Second point there, why we should use, obviously, Europe as a forum, platform for this type of own resources, is that at national level, the argument goes, you cannot have a financial transaction tax created on national level because obviously all the capital goes away. The whole capital trading goes out of your national areas. And that's why you need a regional or the international approach as a whole. Yes, that's why the European Union exists. It exists exactly because we have problems you cannot solve at the national level. You solve that at the European level. That's why we created the European Union. And this is a primary example, the financial transaction tax, for example, which we should obviously now try to develop. There are other areas also. Now you speak of the green economy, the climate change issues, carbon taxes, plastic taxes, also digitalizing taxes, et cetera, which are typically areas which you cannot properly create taxations at the national level. Instead, you have tax evasions very frequently. So obviously, now we have the opportunity to develop that own resources. Here, particularly, we social democrats, we have the opportunity to show the difference. That's our policy, and we can clearly say that one. We already see that we have taken up it here in Helsinki, in our parliament, that the right way is the Conservative Party is not very much feeling to discuss about that area. But now, because of the crisis, let's utilize that exactly to develop this own resources system. Obviously, it's not on the agenda of the summit next week, but it's on the summit, on the discussion on MFF the coming years. And obviously, now we can show a difference.
Miguel, let me come back to you because Margarita has raised an interesting point there, which you might want to develop. She talked about the forecasts of the extent of the recession which we're facing into, and we don't know how big it is, but we know it will be big. We know that there will be a threat of very large-scale unemployment. We know that for young people it may have a terrible effect, a scarring effect on their careers. What is your view in terms of the public goods that need to be focused on by Europe over the coming years? What should be those Europe-wide spending areas that should be the kind of things that money that is raised through additional own resources could be spent on? For example, people have talked about investing more in high-speed rail across Europe, investing more in the just transition, investing more in public health in the light of COVID and all of that. What is your sense of how the budget and the recovery plan should be deployed in terms of these Europe-wide public goods? And also perhaps that connects to your point earlier about trust, that if European citizens feel that money is being spent on these very obviously useful public goods, maybe they will trust each other and the European Union more.
That's precisely the point, Robin. I completely agree with you. We need to focus on areas where spending across Europe can be consensual, where we can see the benefits of European spending. And I think you've sort of raised the main areas. Definitely infrastructure is a key thing where this spending can be visible, where this spending can be rational, and where Europeans can get behind this. So the issue is more where can we spend this money? As you've said, I think the climate transition is definitely one of them. We need to quickly decarbonize, and that will require huge investments in terms of energy and most of all transport. I think actually, whereas technology now is mature in terms of production of electricity, we need to have a big wave of house renovations and a big wave of decarbonization of transport, because that is where it will be harder and slower to decarbonize if we don't put in the big investments. Second area is definitely on on the issues of digital. I think connecting to this innovation in general, you know, I think the fact that Europe as an economy has been for the past many years based on we are the place where companies go to do R&D, we are the places where high-skilled jobs are created, is clearly under threat. Emerging economies, emerging markets like China are investing in India are investing heavily in knowledge. And if we do not put in the investments, not only to be strong on digital, but also to be extremely strong on innovation, and to do that not only based on certain national champions and certain big cities, but across the whole of the continent, then we will clearly end up being overtaken by these other economies like we were in manufacturing. And definitely manufacturing is an area where we also need to recover some of our expertise because it's not enough to just simply design products. We need to build them as well. And as we have seen, the need for a shorter supply chain is definitely an important thing ahead, not only for environmental terms, but also in terms of economic terms. Lastly, I'd say we need to have a look at social rights, at the European way of life. It can't just mean democracy or free market. It must mean as well to have a certain standard of living and dignity at work and strong welfare states. And so I think it's very important for Europe to invest in this. We have a big challenge in aging and in the care economy, where there is a big lack of financial sustainability for families to put up the money to you know, put people in residential homes. And so I think we have a big, big challenge there. Not only public investment in terms of infrastructure, but social investment as well, which has been something we've been talking about a lot. But to wrap up, I mean, I'm just a bit concerned that when we talk too much about public goods, we devalue the importance of the EU funding the cohesion policy to national governments, giving to national governments the opportunity for them to decide which are the projects which are important in their own territory. And truly, I think when we threaten cohesion policy, we are threatening the convergence machine, which is already clearly broken in the European Union. And while at the moment we've seen only the UK leave the European Union, I fear that southern European countries like Italy might at some point feel like the EU isn't working for them. And so if we want for all countries to continue to benefit from the advantages of the single market, and we know from the studies that juste retour is not an accurate logic because it fails to put into account the enormous benefit that northern European economies actually receive from southern European economies participating in the single market. If we want to preserve the single market and the European ideal, we need everybody to benefit from the European Union.
Sure. And before I leave you, Miguel, obviously the tensions that have been played out between, broadly speaking, northern and southern European member states over the last number of months have been very evident. How do you yourself feel that when it comes to the European Council next week, that it's best to try to find what is the best way through those tensions to get to the most positive outcome, do you think?
Well, I think the leaders have been making a big effort to come together and to find a pragmatic conclusion. Margherita made an important speech in the European Parliament where she said that perhaps the big problem will be an excess of pragmatism. And we've seen that in previous councils, in order to reach a deal, we accept a bad deal. And the stakes are too high right now for us to accept a bad deal. So I think we will need to continue on the tenets in which we agree, which is shared resources, but only in certain areas. And as well, we need to begin a strong debate on own resources, because if we don't find a way to finance this in the medium term in a way which is fair and sustainable and shared, then ultimately we will fall back into the previous logics of who gets what in the end and who's a net recipient, who's a net contributor, and that won't help anyone at all.
So, Margherita, how can the level of ambition be raised from, if you like, from pragmatism to principle? What is the kind of narrative that is needed to ensure that we get a positive outcome over the next number of days and the weeks and months ahead?
Yes, this is a key point because Miguel raised very important points. And I can add to the points raised by Miguel the role of all. And today we will have a debate in the European Parliament on the rule of law in the framework of the European budget. Because we need to develop this debate. We can't use European money, money coming from European citizens, for some projects that are not linked with European values. European money must be linked to European values. Why? It's why the importance of the rule of law is more and more important. And I imagine that all the leaders will have a very important challenge with Hungary and Poland concerning this key point, that it is the respect of the rule of law. Concerning the I can understand, maybe I'm Portuguese, it's not normal from a Portuguese to say it, but I can understand, I as rapporteur in our group, I organized a meeting with the heads of delegation, of the Norse delegations, the frugal delegations, in our group. Because it's we need to understand the differences and the identity of each country. So we need to understand it. I can understand when my colleagues from the North ask me, yes, but European money to do what? The answer is clear. And it's clear in the MFF and the Recover Fund proposals. The answer is to link this money to the development, to use this money, to spend this money on the development of the European priorities. It means digital transition, fight against crime, to have a level playing field in the internal market, to respect and to give more resilience to the chain values, European values chains. We need to act in this priority. It's why it's very interesting that the Commission will use the European semester strategy, the European semester methodology, to spend the money. Because in the end of the day, each member state will present its national program, economic and social recovery plan, but respecting the European the political priorities, the European political priorities. In the Portuguese case, it's clear that our key priorities in the government are very coherent with the political priorities, the European political priorities, because the European political priorities are decided by national leaders together. So if my country wants to go a research project to go to the moon, Portugal can do it, but without the European money, because this is not an European priority. This is my example. So I think that we can use, we can spend the money respecting all the attitude of the different member states. It's why I can answer to my Norse colleagues, yes, we have conditionalities, we have conditions to spend the money, to use the money. And the main condition is to respect the European priorities. And the second main condition is the respect of rule of law. So this is our exercise, and I think that all the socialist leaders, they will have a preparatory meeting in the day before the European Council, and I wish that they will have a common approach. I'm very concerned on the amount of the MFF, because for the future. Because I can say for this period of time, we can solve the problem. The member state will have money with the fund. So this is not so tricky. This is not so difficult, but it's difficult for the future. This is my point.
And Kimmel, can I bring you in there? Because obviously there will be people, particularly on the other side of the political spectrum in Finland, but not just there, who will be saying, no, we can't give all this money to the Portuguese or the Italians or the Greeks or the Spanish. What is your view about how that issue can best be discussed? The implication, I think, of what Miguel and Margarita is saying is that the goals of the spending should be clear. They are the social and ecological goals which Europe is heading towards. We can agree on that, and the national member states can work out how best to implement that in practice.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. We need Margaret to speak for our parliament. That was exactly what we want to listen. And I'm reflecting the overall tone of the debate in Finland and maybe here in Northern Europe as a whole. Obviously, if there are funds used, European funds used, our funds used, citizens' funds to use, we want to know how we use and where we use them. We don't want to deliver funds wherever, but exactly know how they go. And that's why you, Margaret, very nicely emphasized, it's a question about European values and European principles where we are putting the funds. If those are respected, I suppose majority, now I can only say it, on the majority of Finns also would agree. I would say so when this recovery instrument debate started this spring, actually, there were a few basic criteria which were most important for us. Not actually the size itself, obviously now the size is also important. Loans, grants are important, what are the relations, et cetera, et cetera. But the major issue was that we want to keep the budget sovereignty. The budget sovereignty is a very holy concept for us, that our budget is our budget, our parliament decides Finnish money, and when we are allocating the European Union the funds, we should also know where it goes. That's very clear. Secondly, we were very hesitant not to agree. We didn't want to agree on the euro bonds, Miguel took it up already earlier, or a joint debt issue as such. We don't want to have a joint debt at the European level as if whoever can use it whatever way. So that's obviously the problem. And also we wanted to emphasize very strongly as a precondition that each country has at the final end responsibility about its own national economy and also about its own debts. That's absolutely clear. But then comes the next issue. What is the, and Margaret took it very clearly up, what are the conditionalities? I can easily understand that Miguel, and not necessarily Miguel, but in Southern Europe, they are very, very, very critical on the issues of conditionalities. I'm a social democrat. I am also very critical on the conditionalities which were imposed. Yes. But what was exactly used on Greek situation, for example? Obviously, I am in Finnish debate, we are frequently on the issue that what is European Union? There are lots of opposition now, actually, in the right wing is growing and growing in Finland, who are opposing European as a whole. Actually, they are so saying on the contrary, like Miguel is saying, that in Italy and in Southern European countries, that we are not benefiting at all. The Northern Europe is benefiting. We are arguing here, no, we Finland, we are not benefiting at all out of European Union. It's only the Southern European countries or cohesion countries which are enjoying it, our monies, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously the issue goes that I am personally a social democrat in Finland. We are for European Union. We are absolutely for European Union because we need the integration at the European level to solve the common European problems. But the issue is, as a social democrat, for you, Margaret and Miguel, we all share, Robin, we share it. What are the conditions? And the austerity policy imposed by the European Central Bank and by European economists in those days, 10 years back, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, we're furious. That was absolutely furious. If I would have been living in Italy or in Athens, et cetera, I would be also against European Union with those type of imposing policy coming out of there. So now, for us, it's a discussion, what is the content of conditionalities? And you will put it very rightly now, when the huge recovery instruments are now created, that yes, we need conditionalities, but they are new type of conditionalities. They are for social Europe. They are for green Europe. Those are the issues where we are putting the conditions and we are really imposing them, because that's the only way of guaranteeing that the right type of policy comes out of that, that we can share all and we can benefit all. So I am not against at all about conditionalities issues as such, but I'm very much of concern. What are the conditions you are speaking about? And that's why it's a very good opportunity for us to utilize this recovery instrument debates in our countries, that how really, what are the, what we're looking forward, what we're expecting out of European Union, out of the common approach we are doing. So I think that that actually is the area we can easily share the views cross borders. We don't have the divisions north, south, east, west, etc., etc., when we are speaking of those. Actually, then we have the contradictions, to be open blunt, the socialist and the right wing, because that debate obviously is there, and that's a political debate, and that's supposed to be so. Thanks.
And what would you say to the point that Margarita has raised? I mean, you mentioned east and west there, and obviously Hungary and Poland are two very large member states. Margarita is implying is that social and environmental focus should be applied in full cognizance of the rule of law issues.
Rule of law is absolutely crucial. Yeah, Finland was chairing the European Union just recently, and obviously number one item, one of the big items for us was the rule of law. This is absolutely crucial issue. Obviously, we must, if we want to argue internationally about human rights, for example, Obviously, the first thing is to look at the mirror. Can we look at the mirror at Europe that we are respecting fundamental human rights, what we are arguing that the whole world should follow? Obviously, we must be very, very, very concerned what happens in Hungary and Poland, etc. I would even put the conditions. I would easily put the conditions on those grounds for the common funds, what they are using.
Thanks, thanks, Kimmo. And if we talk about the spending by the European Union in this way, with the big challenges we've talked about, the coming recession, the need to reinvigorate social Europe, as Miguel has talked about, and the need to emphasize the ecological transition. And then, of course, the next issue that comes to mind is that even the figures that have been talked about in terms of the recovery plan, the additional 750 billion euro in grants and loans, even that may not be nearly enough. For example, Andrew Watt of IMK has pointed out with some very simple maths that 750 billion euro only works out at 1,500 euro or so per European citizen, and it's spread over several years. Is this going to be enough? Is the challenge. And I say that partly because there clearly is resistance. In an article in the Financial Times by Stefan Löfven, the Swedish Prime Minister, just a very short time ago, written on behalf of the other prime ministers of Denmark, Finland, and the Netherlands and Austria. In that article, Mr. Löfven said, "There is no such thing as new or fresh money." And he said, how could it be suddenly possible to spend 500 billion euro of borrowed money and send the bill into the future? I suppose as we're getting towards the end of this conversation, I'm inviting you to look to the long term and how we match the revenue available for Europe to the scale of the challenges that we face, given some of these attitudes that maybe go back to the period of austerity, as Kimmo was mentioned, where there is still a fear of spending too much and perhaps spending it in ways that could cause problems in the future. Miguel, maybe you want to come in on that, looking to the longer run and how we are able to think about raising the kind of money that might be needed to cope with these huge challenges.
Thanks, Robin. And I definitely agree with Kimmo that everybody wants national sovereignty on budgets, but we can't have a repetition of the conditionality that we had in 2011. We can't have austerity, and we won't accept that. I think nobody's willing to accept that. If we are talking about positive conditionality on certain areas and where we spend, then that is something we can definitely agree upon as a basis for building trust. How do we raise this money? We definitely need to, first of all, get rid of the unanimous decisions on tax issues in the European Union. We know we have certain jurisdictions in Europe which are, and not so far away from you, Robin.
Not so far away from me in Belfast, yes.
Absolutely engaging in tax competition and eroding not only the ability of themselves having a number of public services, but of the whole European Union raising that money in their own countries. And so we need to halt tax competition. That is the number one area we need to attack. We need to not only have a consolidated tax base, but we also need to implement the country-by-country reporting, which is still stuck in the council. And we need to look at the minimum tax. I mean, the US has a minimum tax. Why don't we in the European Union have a minimum tax to ensure that all corporations pay their fair share? Definitely, I think we need then to touch on some areas which are priority. I think digital is an area where we know corporations aren't paying enough. In terms of environmental taxation, I think this is a key area because, you know, there's a big power to tax and we need to use that power. We need to wield that power to accelerate transition. And so both a revision of the energy tax directive to make sure that, for example, aviation planes pay their fair share for the fuels, also border taxes so that, you know, our imports, when they are carbon intensive, don't have a lower price than their actual cost to the planet. And also, I think in terms of inequality, we need to implement taxes to curb inequality because it is a huge cost, not only to social cohesion, but actually it hinders growth, economic growth. And so be it a financial transaction tax to curb speculation, be it a net wealth tax, which has been recently proposed, I think that would be, those would be good avenues. But I think the consensus is there on the environmental issues. The consensus is there more or less on certain tax competition issues, namely on corporation tax. I think we are beginning to see some movement there, but not in these bigger inequality issues of the financial transactions tax or the net wealth tax. Unfortunately, I think it's not moving there. I think we have one thing we can do, which is time appropriate for this crisis, which can make a big difference to financing the recovery budget and then later on, which is the excess profits tax. This is something which has already existed in the past, namely in the United States, in the war and post-war period. And I mean, it's obvious companies should not be making a huge profit out of this pandemic crisis. And so if we use that moral argument, I think it would be absolutely fair, absolutely possible to convince all European countries to adopt an excess profits tax, which would help to finance a lot the upcoming recovery instruments.
One of the problems during the period of high austerity, if you like, was that what was being experienced economically across Europe was asymmetric shocks. Countries like Greece and Spain and Portugal and Ireland were being much more severely hit than others. Obviously, the pandemic is a symmetrical shock, which has struck the whole of Europe. And you're shaking your head, Miguel. You're not so convinced.
Yeah, I'm
about
shaking
that.
My head because it's a symmetric shock, but with hugely asymmetric impacts.
Yeah.
And so I think when we keep repeating this line that it's a symmetric shock, we are ignoring that some countries will be having a shock that is much bigger than others, and their welfare states have different levels of preparation. And so we will need to have, in order to have an equitable response, we can't have equal responses to all member states, but the responses need to be tailored towards those needs.
I'm conscious that we're running out of time, and I'd like to be able to invite Margarita to come back and offer any concluding thoughts she might have. Just quickly, first of all, Kimo. Are there any final comments you would like to interject before I bring in Margarita to conclude?
I would like to say a few words, yes.
Just very quickly, Kimo, yes.
Yeah, very quickly. First of all, the question about what is enough. Nobody knows what is enough. Now it's 750. That's a figure used. We say in Finland it's too much. Some say maybe it's not even enough, etc., etc. Life shows what is enough, what is enough. I like Miguel when he took up the issue of the tax competition, what we should control at the European level. He didn't mention, but tax paradises, obviously, there are those we should obviously take in on the issue, etc., etc. These are the opportunities for us. But then comes the Miguel last point. Is this a symmetric or asymmetric crisis? I said, of course, it's symmetric in a way of the coronavirus. Asymmetric impacts in different ways. He mentioned welfare states can respond in different ways than non-welfare states or less welfare states. But what is the big problem what we are raising in Finland when we are looking at the conditionalities which are needed when creating the criteria for funding are that what we are measuring, it's true, in Finland, impact in terms of human life has been quite less than in Sweden or in Spain or in Italy, etc., etc. But the economic price has been huge because we have paid. We have paid so much in order to avoid it, avoid the human losses. I don't mention, I almost mention a country, okay, I mentioned the country, Sweden. They have a really different strategy. They have, the economic costs are not so big in Sweden. Human costs are colossally much more than in our country. So please, when we are thinking about the asymmetric impacts of the coronavirus crisis, calculate that there are different ways of calculating it. Economic costs, social costs, and obviously human costs, etc., etc. Thanks a lot. It was a great debate.
Thank you, Kimmo. Margarita, some final concluding thoughts from you. Be very welcome.
To end the meeting, thank you very much for all the arguments and all the debate. And we arrived just now to a key debate concerning to contribute a grid for the distribution of the money. So our debate, how to distribute the money among countries, is linked to this debate. It means the criteria will be linked to the economic and social consequences or to the resilience of the systems before the crisis. So it's a big debate that we have now to create this grid for the distribution of the money among member states. But before, and I'd like to add, not to repeat the arguments, but to give a new arguments. It's clear the role of the own resources. They are needed. The architecture of this proposal is built on base that we will have own resources. But one point is needed. We are forgetting this point. Is we need to create, to use the passerelle mechanism existing in the treaty to replace the unanimity by the majority. It's very difficult to create European taxes on the base of the unanimity. And we need to use this passerelle to move to the majority. This is a key point for the political decision, because it's clear that member states need to have this recovery fund, this recovery plan. It's not an individual need, because the European Union needs it, because European Union is stronger, European Union economy is stronger if national economies are stronger. Maybe we can repeat this debate in a moment, I don't know, but before end this debate, I'd like to thank to Kimmo and Miguel. I imagine you have a key role in your national parliaments, and when we may remain in contact, stay in contact, because I think that maybe later on we need to work together. And I'd like also to thank to Stefan to work with us organizing these debates. Is the third one or the fourth? I'm not sure. I think that it's the third one. And also I'd like to thank to Robin, who asked us very concrete points and helped us to be more concrete and more and to have a more oriented debate. Thank you very much to everybody. And also to Nuno, who prepared also this debate. He didn't took the floor, but he prepared all the debate. Thank you.
Thank you, Margarita. And
Thank you also to Kimmo and to Miguel and to Stefan and Nuno for setting this up. I hope that it's been a useful debate. There's been a widespread feeling across Europe since the pandemic that there can be no return to what was previously deemed to be normality. We are now in a new scenario, and that new scenario will require a Europe which operates in a much more united way, as Margarita has just said, and which allocates to itself the resources to do so. And I think today's debate has been useful in setting out what that future might look like. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you don't miss future episodes by subscribing to Social Europe Podcast. You can also read our articles on www.socialeurope.eu and follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at Social Europe. Until next time.